Hello, this is Julianne Good, and this is Psych 101. Welcome. We are here to make psychology more understandable with tips for you, your family, and your friends to make your lives easier. Tonight, my special guest is Dr. Ihsan Garajadoghi from Nehru's Clinic down in Irvine, California. And the second half of the show will be with my friend Sat Khalsa from Mesa, Arizona. And we will be talking about a variety of addictions this evening with Dr. Garaji. We are going to be talking about online addiction specifically. So, Dr. Garaji, how are you doing?
Doing good. Thank you very much. How are you, Julia?
I'm very good. Thank you. And thank you for being on again. You're always intriguing to have on. So I'm excited to hear what you have to say about online gaming addiction. So with this type of addiction, why is it becoming more prevalent in our society, would you say?
Well, there is actually a little bit of a, I would say, misconception about online gaming addiction. The addiction itself is not becoming more prevalent. There is certainly addiction to online gaming, just like to any other activity, especially those prominent ones that we know of, like sex addiction, gambling, substance use, alcohol, and so forth. But online gaming certainly is becoming a lot more prevalent and accessible and really just desirable and attractive. And it has really mainly to do with the benefits of that activity itself. And we can talk about that a little bit down the road, but it's not necessarily, the problem that is propagating itself. I want to make that distinction so we don't put everything into one basket.
Okay, that sounds like a good deal. Yeah, I was reading an article today from Psych Guides, and it had stated that they thought that gaming addiction was similar to gambling addiction. Can you make a comment about that?
Well, addictions in general are very similar to each other. And there is something called process addictions, basically, that really has to do more with non-substance related activities, just like, again, gambling or sexual addiction or online or even just gaming addiction, because we are not consuming substances like alcohol or other types of drugs or prescription meds. And even if you think about it, workaholics, they're kind of addicted to their work. They're kind of escaping the underlying more groundbreaking, more core issues. So in reality, the addiction cycle is basically the same, no matter what type of either process or substance or type of activity we are talking about or addicted to. So certainly, there is this mechanism of self-soothing escape or avoidance that is helping us not face the more painful experiences in life, mm-hmm. whether it is gambling, that is providing that reprieve, or online gaming.
So it's, in other words, you can maybe switch one addiction for another. Is that true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That happens all the time. In fact, the reason we have this notion of revolving doors at treatment centers all around the nation is really goes back to what you just said, because people tend to go to treatment centers and kind of get rid of one addiction or, let's say, a set of habits without really permanently replacing that with more healthy habits and more healthy lifestyles. So what they do ultimately is they end up, leaning toward another escape mechanism. So, for instance, let's say somebody downgrades from heavy, hardcore drugs to, let's say, just smoking cigarettes, let's say, or they switch from drug addiction to, let's say, sex addiction, or again, gambling, or online gaming, or whatever it may be. these are just substitutes to fill the gap that they have, they encountered after going through very short-term treatment. It's usually the case with short-term treatment rather than long-term treatment. If somebody goes through more rigorous or long-term treatment, they certainly come to terms with the more underlying problem that, there are core issues in our upbringing, in our life, in our emotional regulation, in our way of even philosophical viewpoint of life, and interpersonal relationships that we really need to tend to. And when we attend to those core issues and find solutions and resolutions for them, then we don't need to go to certain self-numbing activities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or they can start backing away from them, and as you said, replace them with healthier habits, like connecting with other people, I think is really essential, which to me, it seems like an addiction kind of is trying to fill that hole, trying to be the replacement for maybe not having close friends or family around or, you know?
The coping mechanism, yes, the addiction, not really. I mean, the addiction just is this kind of a conundrum, a little bit of a almost like a trap that a person finds themselves in it, meaning that before they know, they have gone too far into a certain habitual coping style. They generally, people start that path of creating a coping style with good intentions, and also there is really major benefit in the beginning, but most likely some of these paths, if you will, or coping styles, they have created a little bit of a escape or reprieve, or kind of reduced the stress and even damage or harm that a person was facing. But then that's where the trap comes into play, because we don't know what we are really creating. In the beginning, it looks good, but down the road, it is really ugly.
So, Dr. Garajadhage, where would you say that point is when a person gets to the point of it, gaming being fun, slipping into an addictive pattern?
At any point, I mean, that's hard to say in terms of, when. Usually we see the symptoms, and then the symptoms are indicative of a major disconnect and problem that is kind of too late. It's too late to really nip it in the bud. It is way down the tube, if you will. And then it's harder to address. For instance, you may see it with households, let's say family members, parents, or caring siblings complaining that their family member, one of the family members, is addicted to, let's say, online gaming. So what they mean by that, more or less, is that this person is isolating themselves. They are spending most of their time, as well as perhaps money and other resources, playing games rather than interacting in a social, normal way with their peers or with family members. And also maybe even neglecting chores, tasks, responsibilities, such as paying bills or taking care of themselves, even hygiene. Mm-hmm. So those are the symptoms. Once we see those, like family members complaining about these deficits, that more or less shows that we have some kind of a problem there. But the actual problem is not necessarily the online gaming. It is just conveniently there and has filled the gap, as you had mentioned earlier. It could have been anything else. In absence of, let's say, prescription drugs or alcohol or drugs or, other in gambling or sex addiction, online gaming has filled that gap. So that's how we kind of recognize that there is a problem, and certainly we have to attend to it. But The actual problem itself is not the online gaming. There's something else going on.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, you know, what else was there to really kind of create that void in the first place, where the individual who is isolating themselves in the room didn't really have any other and better means of living their lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what I mean by that is not financial or, if you will, kind of other types of just typical resources, like if they have a roof over their head, if they have enough money in their pocket, if they have a good school that they can attend. It goes way beyond that. Usually, you know, painful experiences that a person has just growing up in this world, they are not necessarily efficiently and effectively dealt with due to a myriad of different factors. We can get into that later on. But generally, people are left without effective coping mechanisms
mm-hmm.
in facing these, let's say, life's problems. And it could be, an example could be, let's say, a teenager who is going through puberty. Everybody goes through puberty. Everybody has some kind of a problem with that because they're going through this phase where they have to go through body changes, hormonal changes, growth rate, you know, spurts and all kinds of physiological as well as psychological and social interactional changes. And change is not easy, especially when it affects the person's presentation and interaction with others, because it can lead to disapproval or lack of self-esteem or mm-hmm. self-confidence and competence. So all those problematic instances or events cannot be effectively dealt with, you know, in every person's life. So every one of us, we really have some kind of painful experiences that we haven't even been able to resolve, or have just brushed it aside and we're not thinking about it anymore. But sooner or later, these deficits will show themselves. And the question is, at that time, what is happening? Do we have enough resources? Do we have effective relationships? Do we have people we can rely on?
Mm-hmm.
What is our own emotional health, if you will? Also intellectual health. You know, those are the questions that we have to ask ourselves in order to answer really what is going on underneath it all.
So it can be really complex underneath it all. And especially since, you know, of all the addictions that you had mentioned, probably the gaming addiction is the most socially acceptable because there's so many people that are online daily and people don't even think twice about it. I mean, they're even, you know, doing gaming on their phones at work sometimes. So, you know, it's a way for a lot of people to reduce stress, reduce boredom. So it's more socially acceptable, and it's starting seemingly at younger ages. You're seeing those, you know, little games that a lot of parents are giving to their 2, 3, 4 year olds to keep them busy, to keep them occupied, so that their parents can go about and do their, you know, multiple tasks every day. It's almost like another form of a babysitter, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think in terms of what you just mentioned, in terms of the social acceptance and the preoccupation of everyone kind of within this activity, or even sometimes it's not even the online gaming. If you think about it, we see so many people, for instance, being preoccupied by their social media, you know, constantly on their phone, checking their Facebook status and posting information, or going on Twitter or going on LinkedIn and this and that. So is that a form of addiction? Not necessarily, because it's like two sides of the same coin. You can look at it from one perspective as an addictive behavior, but also on the other hand, we've got to really look at some other factors, such as, doesn't this really give people certain benefits. Even mm-hmm. with social media, people get benefit from engaging in this constantly because they are able to remain connected in today's disconnected world and today's, you know, fast-paced environment. That is really actually the most effective and efficient way of not losing track of what my friends are doing or what my coworkers are doing or the latest information that I need to have. But if I wanted to research it, it would take me days, and now I can see it posted somewhere that I can download and read immediately.
Exactly.
So, if you look at it from that perspective, you know, there's a lot of benefit to have from this activity. However, how does that type of, let's say, discrepant behavior in terms of its time, location, and immediate communication affect a person's relationships with others, such as, let's say, if two partners are going home after work and they hardly talk to each other because they're so preoccupied with their social media, and then just, you know, say good night and go to bed, and then in the morning they get up and go to work. So you could imagine that their romantic relationship, for instance, could suffer over months or years of doing this.
Mm-hmm.
But if they, let's say, limit their social media activity to half an hour, when they come home, they give each other half an hour, they go online, they take care of their, you know, online business, if you will, and then they put their phones aside and they have normal, you know, one-on-one interactions, then no, there is no problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with online gaming. You know, if there was a limited set of constructs, you know, or parameters set on that, like, you know, use it for an hour, for instance. And while you're using this, you know, what else are you doing really to gain benefit from this? For instance, it could be a learning process. It could be something gained or learned while a person is engaging in an online game. And then they also openly discuss and talk about this rather than a taboo, you know, because a lot of times discussion around online gaming doesn't even occur. You know, parents frown upon, or even teachers or family members, they frown upon and they belittle either the person or the online game. They really make their loved one or their subject feel guilty or ashamed or bad about this activity. So that is how the interpersonal relationship is negatively impacted by something that shouldn't really have such a huge impact.
Right.
And most of it goes back to this misinterpretation that people have of each other. Let's say parents kind of misinterpreting the benefits versus disadvantage ratio of, let's say, the gaming world. And vice versa, the kids, if you will, or students or family members kind of not really communicating very well all these benefits that are really tangible. They're not just, they don't just exist in someone's fantasy, but the real benefits to actually, you know, engaging in games. There's a reason our mind really gravitates toward
mm-hmm.
Engagement of games.
Yeah, well, it's the excitement, it's the challenge, it's, you know, if you're doing multiple player games, it's connecting with other people from, say, other countries and engaging in a different form of connecting with people. So I agree with you to find...
It goes beyond the, let's say, excitement and interactional value of it. For mm-hmm. instance, you know, while we are engaging in a game, eye-hand coordination, focus, attention, concentration, detection of patterns, the way we vacillate between feelings and thoughts, the way we regulate our own, you know, disappointment or excitement, and then apply it to, let's say, either game mechanics or parameters, or even, you know, learn how to grow our, at times, even mathematical abilities within the game structure. Because, for instance, a lot of games nowadays, they are built in such a way that a person has to go through a gradual growth line, if you will. It's almost like a learning curve, and then they build upon less complex structures and create more and more complex structures. That requires a lot of thinking. It requires a lot of planning. It can affect a person's decision-making and strategizing. And all these are actual skills that are facilitated by a simple interaction within a game.
Mm-hmm. That's a great way of looking at it, the benefits. So it sounds to me like probably the key is learn from the positive aspects you can get from gaming. Have the teachers and the parents look at that, sit down with the kids and say, let's talk about your games. What are you learning from them? And then set boundaries on it. Okay, this is how much you can play it per day. And then you need to go do homework. You need to do other life responsibilities. So kind of mix it up and put boundaries on it. And, you know, play responsibly. I guess that's the biggest key of it, correct?
Play responsibly, but also engage. You know, my advice to parents and teachers would be remain engaged with individuals that you care about. So as much as you care about, let's say, how they dress, or let's say what cars they drive, or their social interactions with, let's say, friends, who their friends are, or maybe the subjects that they're interested in, why not also taking an interest in the types of games they play?
Yes.
What occurs during these games? What did these individuals learn? How come it is so exciting to them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, share in this experience with the person you care about. And the more you share, the more connected you remain. Then there is enough rapport and trust in between two parties to be able to also have that type of influence where you can set limits.
Yes, that's fantastic advice. And Dr. Garaja Doggy, I know we have limited time with you this evening, so could you tell us a little bit about the health fair that Nehru's Clinic is going to be involved in on Saturday?
Absolutely. That's going to be a cultural art and psychology-focused health fair with about 35 vendors who are either artists or therapists or leaders in the society. They're coming from all kinds of health-related organizations, be it a medical office or addiction treatment center or mental health treatment center. And they're all out there to connect to the public. It is taking place at a location called Bella Terra, which is a shopping mall off of the Beach Boulevard and the 405 Freeway.
In Huntington Beach.
Huntington Beach.
Yes, yes, perfect.
And it is a really wonderful place to actually connect, network, understand more about, you know, how art and culture really both can help a person overcome certain challenges in their lives, such as, you know, painting or drumming or listening to music or dancing or all kinds of other artistic behavior. So it takes place this coming Saturday, March 7th, between the hours of 12 and 5 p.m.
Terrific. And I hope everybody can make it out there. It should be beautiful weather, and it will be very informative. Dr. Garaja Doggy will be out there. I will be also out there at the therapy cable booth, which we are both involved with. So, Dr. Garaja Doggy, it's wonderful to have you on again. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you very much for the time. And I also would like to thank the listeners for listening in on Psych 101. You create great content, Julianne. And I would love to continue this in the future.
Thank you. And I would love to have you back on again when you have more time. And we can really delve into another subject. And yes. And also, everybody watch Therapy Cable, which Dr. Garaja Doggy is. He is the chair of, basically. I mean, you are on a lot of the videos, which are wonderful videos on many, many topics on psychology. So thank you so much for producing that and hosting, and keep up with the good
welcome.
Work. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're going to take a little break here, and then we are going to be back with Sat Khalsa from Mesa, Arizona.
The Chicago School of Professional Psychology offers numerous psychology, behavioral, and health-related science graduate degrees at three campuses: Los Angeles, California, including branches in Westwood and Irvine, Chicago, Illinois, and Washington, D.C., and online. The Chicago School prepares students to meet the ever-changing mental health needs of society through classroom experience and real-world training. The Chicago School Counseling Centers in Irvine and Westwood provide caring, confidential, and affordable psychological services to individuals and their families. For more information, visit thechicagoschool.edu.
And thank you to the Chicago School of Professional Psychology for sponsoring Psych One-on-One and being a contributor to many of the shows. That is the school that I received my master's at in 2013, and I really appreciate all that they've done and the great education that they have for the master's program for marriage and family therapy. And while we are waiting for my next caller, I do want to mention just some of the symptoms for the gaming addiction. If you feel like you have had any of these occur because you've been playing games a little too much, some of the symptoms are feelings of restlessness and irritability, preoccupations with the thoughts of previous online activity, lying to friends and family members regarding the amount of time you've spent playing, and isolating from others in order to spend more time gaming. And some of the physical symptoms are fatigue, migraine headaches due to too much concentration, carpal tunnel syndrome caused by, you know, just using the controllers, poor personal hygiene, having sleep problems, having eating problems, and some other muscle fatigue. So again, if you're having those kind of symptoms, talk to somebody about it. You know, kind of question as to whether or not, you know, that the gaming is filling some kind of void that maybe connecting with your family and friends could fill in a nice, healthy manner. So, okay, so my next caller is a longtime friend from Mesa, Arizona, and he is a substance abuse counselor, and his name is Sat Khalsa. Hi, Sat, how are you doing?
How are you doing?
Wonderful. How you doing?
Is it okay to use the speaker phone?
Well, if we're having any problems with it, we'll let you know, okay?
Okay.
So, how long have you been an addictions counselor?
Probably about 12 years. My master's is in elementary school counseling. And I kind of like had a lot of experiences in domestic violence. And so I branched into that. And from there, I went into substance abuse because I was alive in the 60s.
You survived the 60s.
And I still remember them.
But you probably learned a lot from the 60s. What a transformative decade.
Truly, truly, truly it was. And, you know, a lot of us, that was such a remarkable time because it was a true transition time, you know, from the old 1950s time. It was really to those of us who grew up in it, it felt very stunted, and so we took substances in those days for, you know, to expand our mind, not to, you know, party. That wasn't the objective. So, but those were those days, and it gave me a clue as to what was, you know, what addiction had to do with my life, because I have been in program for a long, long time, and I have a certification in, I'm a licensed substance abuse counselor. And so I understand that you are working with people that have an addiction to gaming. Is that right?
Yes, that was what the first half was about. And it's just, tonight's just kind of about addictions in general, about, you know, how people get into them, how they stay in them, why they get into them. You know, just some of the basics, because my ideology on this is that everybody's addicted to something at one time or another. Even, chocolate. I think a lot of people are addicted to chocolate, and some of them are very proud of being addicted to chocolate. But, I mean, it totally runs the gamut from, it fills a void to it could be, like, totally self-destructive. So, what is your idea about addictions and why people get into them?
Well, addictions hit you, psychologically and physiologically, and they all have kind of similarities, but it's always never about the substance or the game or, the sex, the this or the that. It's never about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's always about a choice that you're making to try to bring some kind of relief to your life. And that is experienced as pleasure. And we do those things and we repeat those things, and where it comes down to our choice is, where is it affecting us, either physiologically? Is it affecting our health? Is it affecting our social contacts, our people, our loved ones? Is it affecting my income, my job, my future, financially? And that's where the choice comes in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some people are very content to live in the smallest possible environment possible and not require or demand a lot of stuff. And so we are in a financial world where everything we do affects the kind of income that we have to support our life. And addictions are those thingies out there that we grab onto to, feel good physically, feel good mentally, feel less stressed, da da da. And somehow it just makes us feel right. But it's taking over your life. That's where your choice has got to be. Well, no, I don't want to do that. Because if you get down there and you're sitting there and you don't have anything and you're in a homeless shelter and you've lost it all and it all has to do with that addiction, that's a very unusual choice.
Yeah, and the addiction takes power over you. You don't have control over the addiction. That's where I think the choice comes in. But, I think also it has a lot to do with, as you had stated, and Dr. Garagiadoggi had stated, that it's brain physiology. Some people have the components to become more easily addicted than other people. Of course, if there is a family history of addiction, then a person has a higher chance of becoming addicted to whatever substance that they choose.
Exactly. And so it's kind of like lactose intolerance.
That's an interesting analogy. How is that?
Well, you grew up drinking milk. Your mother gave you milk, blah, blah, blah. And what you find out at a certain time in your life, you're lactose intolerant. Well, that's an unusual situation. Mm-hmm. But it's a reality. And if you try to go past it, it knocks you on your knees.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it can be devastating. And the addictions that we have to stuff has got to be, it's the same kind of situation. I mean, it's not going to bring you any kind of relief. Even though at that moment it feels really good to take a really nice big chilled cup of coffee and a few milk and a few Oreos, because it feels good then, but it devastates you.
If it keeps on being a habit, yes. And then all of a sudden you have to have that, right, whatever the substance is.
You recognize that finally you get, okay, I'm lactose intolerant, and you don't mess with it. You just don't.
Yeah.
And if your life is showing to you that you're having the propensity to have an addictive personality, and we all know, if you've got an addictive personality, for heaven's sake, because, you can get addicted to all kinds of stuff out here in our world, but some of them can really drag you into some very serious, weird situations.
Yes, they can.
They can be, and they can be messing up your life if you're not careful. And we've all kind of gotten, and had experiences where they're like, whoa. I do not go into places where you can pull down on a one-armed bandit and gamble. Mm-hmm. I don't. I can just, I can feel the surge. It's not something I feel safe with.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other things that I just don't feel safe with. So no, I don't go there. Why endanger all of the things that you work so hard for?
Right. If you've built up a certain wisdom for, that addiction or that habit served a purpose at a certain point in my life, but it doesn't serve that purpose anymore because I saw that I went overboard with it. And I had to suffer from the consequences the next day or the next week or whatever, through behavior or getting physically sick or emotionally sick or shutting down. However you get to bottoming out or you get to that place where you've just had enough. I can't do this anymore. I have to change. I have to do something else on this because this isn't working anymore. And it's messing up everything. And, hopefully a person doesn't have to get to that bombing out stage. But some people, it seems like that's the only way that they can stop. So go ahead, Sot.
Oh, you and I are buds because, we always morph these things into spirit.
Yes.
And for you and me, that's where we go because, that's where our brains go. And
our hearts.
Here we are on this little ball of mud going through space about 2 million miles an hour. And we can get totally involved in the physical thing and go. And there's a lot of adrenaline and endorphins that get produced by that journey. But there's another journey that is to me, at this point in my life anyway, it's just like really a fun situation, knowing where I am, who I am, and why I am. And, you know, having that sense and looking out at what, you know, is being presented, doesn't matter about whose God is where. It just matters that we're part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And just take every second that you've got and just, like, see it for what it is and the miracle of it and how blessed each one of us is just to be here.
Exactly. It is a gift.
And, you know, in addictions, they just have a tendency to create a lot of karma, keep the whole, you know, chaotic, you know, what's that saying, you know, if you do what you do again and again, then you're going to do it again and again. I can't remember how it goes. You probably know it.
Well, but, you know, the one I've lived by since I was 18 is what you do will come back to you.
Oh, yeah, karma, karma.
Karma, karma. And you have to be careful about what you put out there. And I think addiction really puts a total illusion and delusion on the whole process of being fully alive. It cuts into that spirituality.
It's an owie.
It's an
owie. And we're all God's kids, and let's take care of each other and remind each other, hey, you're starting to really mess up.
Yeah, and we need to do that with each other from time to time. Exactly.
I know. And be there for them and
yes,
help them, but be strong and use tough love and, you know, follow the programs that are successful. And, you know, don't hesitate. I mean, here's the deal. The space on the other side today, on the other side of addiction, in other words, being clean and being totally in tune with the natural flow of your endorphins instead of stimulating them, is really good. It's the addiction part has so many pitfalls,
mm-hmm,
so many self-destructive and, you know, destructive, you know, pitfalls in there. Why do that?
Yeah. Well, and it's like finally looking at that addiction as almost like a person, like some evil person that's sitting there going, come on, you want to do me one more time. I'm going to make you feel good. Guaranteed. Come on. We'll bring you in, and you know, and
I'll raise your consciousness. I'll make you feel better. I'll take away your pain. Make you feel stronger, bigger,
faster, better, more. To the point where you have to stop and say, "You're not going to have power over me. That's it. I'm going to have power. I'm going to take my life back." From whatever I'm addicted from, because I deserve to live and I deserve to have a happy life without having something else controlling me from the outside.
Well, you know, there are certain things in our life that we take in complete moderation. You know, even though they are so, I mean, outrageously delectable, why do we do that? Why do we take some things that are really, really delectable out there in moderation?
Because they're a quick fix. Seemingly so. And there's so many temptations out there. I mean, look at the barrage of advertising we are exposed to every day. Buy, buy, buy. Make yourself feel good now. Now, right? There's not the delayed gratification. You have to feel good now all the time. So We're going to hold that thought. We're going to come back to it, and we're going to take a little break.
Are you searching for answers and insight to life issues? Is the behavior of family or friends questionable or concerning? Find tips and possible solutions from the convenience of your own PC, cell phone, or tablet at therapycable.com. Therapy Cable has the most comprehensive library of contemporary therapy videos online. Help may be as easy as a few clicks away. Therapy Cable offers comprehensive therapy videos ranging from addiction to self-care and contact information for qualified providers. Find the answers to your life challenges at therapycable.com.
So this is Julianne Good for Psych One-on-One, and I am on with Sat Khalsa from Mesa, Arizona. He is a substance abuse counselor, and we're talking about addictions in general and how if you are suffering from an addictive process that you can start unwinding from it and taking your own life back. So Sat, with the clients that you work with, what are some of the techniques that you put forward to your clients?
Well, I'm going on 75, so I tell them, hey, look, here you are at 30 years old and you're sitting in a substance abuse group or you're sitting in a domestic violence group, and that's got to be an indicator of that if there isn't some kind of change, you might be headed down a very difficult road. And give them, you know, some as many pointers as I can to help them to see the beauty and value of working at this whole thing called addiction in our life and looking at how our society is expanding so unbelievably rapidly right now. The whole thing of addiction is not going to get easier. It's just not. I mean, that's where the money is, baby.
Yeah, well, there are just so many addiction and rehabilitation centers out there right now. It's amazing. I mean, you open up a Psychology Today magazine, and it's one ad after another for rehab centers.
Well, exactly. So, you know, the question is, I do my best to put, you know, write on boards and all kinds of things and talk about, you know, what does it take today to be a really good man? And just start listing things up there, what it takes to be a good man. And we're coming up with like 50 or so, you know, things, and the guys are up there taking pictures of it so they can take it home and show their wives and things like this. Just getting down to real, you know, almost hippie values. Get healthy, eat right, do things that, you know, while you're on this planet that enhance your intuition and your sensitivity and your humanness, you know.
Yeah, just get back in touch with yourself again. Get honest.
Touch with yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty much is it in a nutshell.
Yeah, just...
And it happens. It happens on a good day.
Yes, to hopefully most of us. Yes, I think that's a journey that we all struggle with, is to really get in touch with what we need and what we want and connecting with others. I think I'm seeing this more and more lately with people trying to reconnect with others and then, you know, going back. It's this in and out kind of a wave of connecting and disconnecting on a major level. And I think a lot of people become a little lost in the process. And I think that really kind of feeds into that addictive component. Well, if I can't, if I'm feeling down, I'm going to go grab myself a drink or a smoke or a pill or, chocolate or whatever is going to be the handiest. I know that's going to change everything, but it's just a temporary fix. Reconnecting with other people is...
Well, we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. We're all going to do it, but you don't do it to the point where it takes your family and destroys your bank account.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's where the choice is. And if you start to see it happening and you want to grab a hold of it, get yourself to an AA or NA meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Or, sex addicts meeting, whatever, In the end, we're the ones that are responsible for our life.
Right.
We can't put it on anybody else. It's not going to be our husband, our wife, our girlfriend, or anybody else. We're responsible. Nobody else. Mm-hmm. We're the ones that live and die.
Yep.
So, in the meantime, if you're putting responsibility for your happiness on anything or anybody, well, you've got some work to do, Lucy.
Yes. Yeah. And it is work, but it's good work. It's healthy work. I've done the work. You've done the work. It can be done.
When
yes.
does it end? Never. And you don't want it to end because it's, that's where the nectar of life is. And you're either living in a really, really dark space where you're totally running all day trying to solve all your problems, come back, wake up, work, get back, do it again, and you cannot expect that's going to feel like really, pleasurable. There's got to be something that has more meaning for you in your life, and if it's not there, if you're not being able to look out on and sense that you're on a little ball of mud going through space and feel absolute
yes.
gratitude to be here.
Exactly.
And you're missing the true meaning of life, the fruit, the nectar of it.
Yes.
And you're just part of it. You always will be.
We always will be, yes. And Sat, we've got, thank you so much for being on. We got to wrap it up. We got kind of a late start here, but I really appreciate you being on again. And I'd like to have you on one more time.
Anytime.
All right. Thank you so much, Sat Khalsa from Mesa, Arizona. And thank you so much for listening to Psych One-on-One. If you would like to contact me, my email is jgoode8@verizon.net. My office number is 562-234-4650. I practice at Nehru's Clinic down in Irvine, California. And thank you so much to Jeremy Hansen for being on the board and the executive producer. You're awesome. Thank you so much for listening this evening. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. Bye now.